That's right, folks. It's time for the Nerdy Point of View podcast, where we explore the nerdier side of life via random topics that we come up with and discuss for your entertainment. I am one of your hosts, the literal worst, Brian Penaloza. With me today is the pun master herself, Carrie Lyons.
Hello, everybody.
And of course, the villain of the show, Martin Franklin.
Good day. Not very villainous today, sorry.
It's that sunshine that's gone. That's going on over there.
Sunshine, yeah.
You must have like moved your blinds a little bit and got touched by a ray.
I feel like I don't even know you anymore.
With us today, we have a special guest, Devin Rue. Devin, please introduce yourself to our audience.
Hi, I'm Devin Rue, and I am an RPG cartographer and illustrator, and spend way too much time putting a ton of detail on maps just for people to go and explore while playing D&D.
Right on.
Beautiful.
What's that?
Beautiful. Sorry, I was just saying it's a wonderful thing.
You were saying it so low that it was just like it was very introspective. It was very nice.
I was trying to go that like subliminal, you know?
So, all right. Well, don't forget, we are also sponsored by DiceBard. Go to DiceBard.com and check out their outstanding selection of dice. They've got glow-in-the-dark dice, the rainbow dice. They've got metal dice. They've got you covered there with many more styles and colors. I am a professional, folks. It is not too early in the morning for me to be doing this. But that said, DiceBard has everything you need to play Dungeons & Dragons if all you need is dice. And of course, don't forget to use the discount code NERDY, that's NERDY, for free expedited shipping on your order. With all that out of the way, we're going to go ahead and jump into some topics. And for the first time in a long time, we're actually going to start with one of mine. And, you know, I looked at all of us who are on the show today and, you know, the fact that we were having Devin on and her cartography is so impressive. And it made me think, you know, with all of us and the things we create, what is it that led us down that path of wanting to do what it is that we do? And, you know, you tend to find where you are now and like the things that you're working on now is a lot of times something you never expected to be doing. So it's always interesting to hear how that started out. And I'd like our guest to go first, actually, if that's okay, Devin.
That's fine, although kind of opposite of what you told me.
No.
No pressure. No.
It was the intros where you went last. This is the topic.
Okay. We'll go with that. Or I'm just too asleep to even pay attention. It doesn't really matter.
All that matters is we're here now.
Yeah, I'll just answer the question and move along. So I actually started, oh God, it's such a long and convoluted story, so I have to give like the abridged version. If we just go into how I got started into cartography, it was during a D&D argument at like 15 years old, and we were arguing over where we started and where we needed to be and how we got like completely turned around. And I made this really, really bad looking map. It was just like, you know, like a bubble, like, hey, we started here and then dot, dot, dot. And then here's where we got attacked by something. And then, so we kind of like figured out like, all right, so now that we know where we are, and then we started arguing about something else. And cause you know, 15-year-old kids, what else do you do during D&D?
Of course.
Right. Other than murder everything we come across. So I started filling in the map just like as they were arguing over a topic I didn't care about. And my DM like leans over and he's like, hey, that's not that bad. Can I borrow that? And I was like, oh yeah, sure. But it led me to the next day that I was in school. I went over and asked one of my science teachers, like, how do we make maps? Like, who does maps? How does this start? Like, where do you even begin? Because it just, like, sparked a bit of interest. And I started taking Earth Sciences, that's a hard word to say, took some landscaping, actually, design, just because I wanted to learn how to draw it. And then over the years, just always drew for my own campaigns or my DMs and never once thought that I should be selling. And I've spent almost most of my life as a traditional artist, selling in galleries.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, selling surreal paintings.
Right on.
And then it was like, oh no, this is so disconnected. And I wanted something that was much more community-based and a lot more fun to do and that I could do at my house. And
I suppose it's a much more direct feedback system as well, isn't it? Working
yes.
with someone like the D&D community.
Well, what I love was, so I kind of like floated around for a little bit trying to figure out what I wanted to do at once I kind of like fired my agent and quit, which is terrifying to do.
Sounds it.
But I kept trying to find different things, including things like biography.
Right on.
Yeah. And it was great because my wife's like, have you ever tried wood burning? And I'm visually impaired. So there's nobody on this planet that would have handed me a hot iron to play with it.
Mm-hmm.
Other than her, because she likes to live dangerously, apparently. But I got into it and I absolutely loved it. And I, Skyrim came out. And so I made a map of the map of Skyrim for myself, because I make prop maps, because this is, like I said, it's what I did for years. And I burned it into a piece of wood. And everyone was like, oh my God. And that's actually how. Everyone's like, you should do cartography for a living. I was like, really? Like, okay, sure. You know, and I sort of fell into it that way.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned the pyrography and your maps. It almost seems like the partnership with Wormwood, where they would burn your maps into their trays and towers, is kind of almost like full circle for you then.
So I kind of approached them about it. Well, the internet approached them about it, and then we thought it was funny, and we decided that we would actually go through with it, which was somebody had said, had made a tweet to both of us stating, like, wouldn't it be awesome to see one of Devin's maps on your guys' stuff? And I was like, oh, you know. And then I was like, hey, let's talk about this. Is this possible? Like, can you guys even do that? And they went, yeah. So we did a couple test runs, of which I couldn't tell anyone about. I had these gorgeous pictures and the whole time, like, just dying to share with everyone. Nope.
Does that happen quite often, whereby, like, the internet will almost make something happen that you're not aware of until someone approaches you?
I want to say yes, but then I will get absolutely inundated with a bunch of people suggesting things I should make
right.
that I want to now say no.
Okay. Yeah.
Sometimes I come up with fantastic ideas, but sometimes, a lot of times, people don't realize they're asking for things that are like copywritten.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Right. So most people don't think of maps as copywritten, but they are. Or they'll suggest something like, I should go work for like Wizards of the Coast, which, don't get me wrong, I would love to collaborate with them, but I don't want to work for anyone. I mean, the whole point of me doing this was to work just for myself.
Right. And I suppose you'd always be working on those. Not that there isn't a whole slew of maps you could be working on, but the great thing is you get to create new things all the time, right? As opposed to work on the same stuff.
Exactly.
Again and again, so.
Yeah, I really hate redoing something I've already done.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So the idea that you would have to like redraw the same area numerous times, no. There'd be a permanent forehead dent in my desk.
Well, also speaking of the pyrography stuff, Carrie, why don't you tell us kind of what led you to that?
All right, sure. Actually, it was at the time I was in sort of a depression, and art was something I always kind of used as an outlet, but I found that what I was doing currently, like, I wasn't going forward enough to stimulate myself enough to kind of come out of that depression or just really be mentally into it. So I can't quite remember how I came across it, but just one day I came across pyrography and I thought, hey, burning things and creating art, I can totally get into that. And just decided to pick up the basics at the local Michaels and try my hand at it. And I just remember working on that very first piece. It was like, God, I think some fairy kind of like fantasy piece I did just for shits and giggles. And I loved it. I loved that it wasn't just plainly drawing down on something, but like that different pressures created different line work, and that the different tips, I was able to really focus myself on it and kind of not focus on the other things and other aspects of my life that were kind of getting me down at the time. And it was just, I don't know, when I find one of the best outlets for me is learning something new. And honestly, like ever since trying it, I've just never really wanted to look back at anything else. It's just something I've completely fallen in love with.
It's such a hands-on art.
It really is. And I don't know if you did the same thing, but there's moments where like I'm holding my breath and I don't realize it. I think I talked about this in a previous episode, and it's just because you're so focused and so into what you're doing that you completely forget everything else around you.
Which is a good thing, considering some of these burners get up to over 400 degrees.
Yes, and that was one thing I was actually using. I was in between apartments at the time, and I was staying at my mom's place at the time where I first started learning it, and I was using her garage as kind of my work area. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the idea that I was using this like extremely hot device, and you have to understand my mother's paranoia, like you can't even have like a lava lamp turned on for like longer than 30 minutes at her house, which takes about as long as it takes, you know, to heat up and let the goo all get cool and stuff. So I never got to see that as a kid, but I was so surprised when she was like, yeah okay, you can do this. But holy the paranoia. She had like a first aid kit on the side and just ready to like prepare, because I can be definitely a klutz. But
and no, how many people ask you if you burn your, or say statements like, oh, I would be covered in burns,
which actually like it's pretty hard to burn yourself with those. Yeah. Unless like you start really kind of fumbling and juggling with the thing, but you know.
Yeah, I told everyone I'm not like slinging it around, it's like a nut chuck at the end of the yeah. You know. Exactly. Do you draw all over yourself if you're doodling on a paper? Like, what are people doing with biography
pens? Yeah, no, I'm just going to hold it in my mouth while, you know, I'm changing the tip and stuff like that.
Right?
You know? Yeah.
It's only bright red hot. Well, depending on the one you use, because I use the European style, so that's...
Oh.
That can get cherry red. Like, you kind of notice that it's warm.
Oh, yeah. Like, even the handle of it, you know, like, it will start to get a little warm after a while.
Yeah. So,
you know, I'm like, okay, you know what? Not getting close to the end of that where the big freaking metal burning tip is. I'm just going to keep my hand up here.
Oddly enough, you become aware of how hot it is. It's
amazing.
Yeah. I'm sensing like so much sarcasm in this conversation right now.
No.
What? Crazy.
And there's some more.
It's actually really cool to talk to someone else about pyrography, though, because I haven't met too many people who have done it as well.
Well, the funny thing is when I first started doing it, I didn't know anyone who did it, like as a full on art, you know, mm-hmm. You know, cause you always meet people that do it as a hobby. So when I actually met somebody else who was trying to make a living at it, it was so funny because she just totally did not prepare me for the internet things that they were going to say to me. But it was great. And she does beautiful work, but there's so many people who just do it as kind of like a hobby, not really, they don't really get into it as much when it becomes like real art.
Mm-hmm.
Totally not saying that somebody burning designs on a birdhouse for their feeder in their backyard isn't art, because I'm sure somebody will like, that's art, Devin. But I mean, as like a living, doing
no, portraits. I totally like that. Yeah. Actually, funny story you might find amusing. In total typical Canadian fashion, we had lumberjacks in my hometown. And they were doing all kinds of tricks with wood and stuff like that. And they were just going to toss out all this wood afterwards. And so I went up to them and I'm like, hey, I'm into pyrography. Would you mind if I had a few slabs to kind of burn on? And this guy just gave me the weirdest look ever, tossed me a piece of wood. And he's like, yeah, have fun with your like 10 seconds of campfire. And I'm like, wait, no, I didn't say I'm a pyro. Like, so many people don't actually know what pyrography is, and you kind of have to explain it to them. So, yeah, it's not really a craft that's, I find, really well known or out there.
here's what you do. So apparently the only way I could get anyone to know what I was doing, because again, I've always gravitated towards the D&D community, I told everyone I was a pyromancer.
Ooh, I like that.
Nice. And that was, after that, they're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I'm just, I don't know why that clicks better, but sure, let's go with it. Then I stopped having to explain that I'm drawing art with fire.
Yeah, I think my grandma still doesn't quite get it. She just thinks I'm burning things, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, but I might borrow that pyromancer thing, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
That is actually a really cool idea.
Right on. What about you, Martin? You know, with Twitch streaming, I know it's kind of an off and on thing for you, but it is something that you, I know you have interest in, and just kind of curious what brought you to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird for me to be in the same sort of conversation with this, because it's never anything more than just a bit of an outlet. I think for me, I only started doing it because I wanted to try and get better at expressing myself, really, because I've always been quite introverted in an excessive way until, I don't know, a couple of years ago. D&D had a big part in that as well. I was a big fan of playing single player games and stuff. And one day I realized that, hang on a minute, I love doing this, but I also really enjoy talking with people and interacting with people. And having done like 12 years of retail work, and so it's not something I'm doing at the moment, but you get used to a certain level of interaction. And it was really, really weird to suddenly not have that. So basically for me, it was an experiment. And like you say, it is on and off, because unfortunately, streaming for me is one of the things that is affected quite heavily by my anxieties and things like that. But I think it just melds really well with, you know, low pressure. It's a casual thing. For me, my most creative outlet is my writing, if I'm honest, but I never share my writing. My writing is a thing that I do in a coffee shop with my headphones in. Where I do my D&D prepping and things like that. And streaming is just a fun thing, I think. Playing scary games with other people, making fun of it. It's just a fun thing, I think.
So what kind of writing do you do exactly? Like, is it poetry, or like, what kind of is it?
So my stuff has always just been short stories. I think I like the challenge of fitting a narrative in a shorter framework, because I'm very... I use a lot of words when I don't need to a lot of the time. So there's this challenge coming from, how can I cut as many of those words out and make a story complete? And then it evolved into, over the last few years, with a lot of my D&D stuff, it's prepping encounters. It's I spent a lot of time building my homebrew world, and recently not a lot of anything. I've actually been in a massive creative drought recently, but I'm looking forward to, you know, I try writing every day just to kind of stretch that muscle and everything. And yeah, I know it's a really interesting thing for me. I've never considered myself a creative. I think that's maybe my problem. I need to embrace it more and just like throw myself into it. But it's really nice having a community like the D&D one, because it's, you just get to try new things out. Like when we get around to my topic later, that has come up from a discussion I had with someone through Twitter, through that kind of thing. So I think I kind of forget to stream a lot nowadays, because I get that interaction that way, if that makes sense. I definitely struggle with, we were actually talking about this before coming on. I'm definitely someone that struggles with making sure I sit down every day to do the thing that I've said I'm going to do. Oftentimes I find that a week has gone and I've not done that task that I was meant to do. I'm very bad at setting deadlines for myself and things. So that's why the streaming is a little bit on and off, but it's just good fun, I think. It challenges my own preconceptions about myself. So
yeah, definitely. Is that something, like, you're writing your short stories and everything, is that something you in the future considering sharing with more people?
Potentially. The first time this year, so I had a relatively short relationship, and that was quite an interesting one for me, because it was the first time I'd actually like shared my writing and stuff with people and have someone like edit it for me. And so I think as the year has gone on, and although I have struggled to write stuff, I think I really see the value in having editors and someone looked through. My word, do I see the value in an editor now? Like, it's crazy how someone without, because obviously when you write something, when you do anything, you're attached to it because it's a thing you've created. But being able to put that into someone else's hands and just kind of go like, okay, criticize. Like, or not necessarily criticize, but like, you know, tell me what I've done wrong, because I know I've missed so many things, because, you know, this is, I'm writing this with like heart or whatever, and I'm not looking at it objectively enough. And so I think I would like to. My biggest issue is I actually lost a lot of my writing. I had a couple of notebooks that were filled and I lost them, unfortunately. So I'm also struggling with, do I rewrite that stuff? I suppose this goes back to, again, you don't want to go back and redo a map you've done.
Right.
I don't want to write the stories I've already written.
But you might write them better and find a different story in it.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true. And I think that is something I'm going to have to attempt, at least. And then who knows? Yeah, maybe we'll add Martin's short story corner to the podcast. We'll get some kitschy music in, you know, I'll sit by a campfire. It'll be great.
Nobody can see the campfire.
They'll hear there's that soft crackling.
Oh, okay. That's all that matters.
I'll sit here
just
with
one of those DVDs, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
It's on net, by the way, just completely off subject, on Netflix you can literally have a virtual campfire or virtual fireplace.
Yeah.
So if you ever sat home and you just want to feel a bit toasty, fire that up, put that on your big screen, just sit by your digital
don't fireplace. Even laugh, I've totally done that back in Canada.
I'm laughing because I've done it.
Yeah, okay, good, it's not just me.
I'm very big on setting a mood when I go to make any of my artwork. Also because, you know, like I hate outward, you know, like worldly distractions. So I put on like really good headphones. I listen to like soundscapes. I'll put on anything other than things that will distract me, like on the internet. And I've had the campfire on a couple of times.
Excellent. Oh, yeah. This is a little bit off subject to a degree, but for the guys that like, you know, you create things. Have you ever created anything in a place that you would have found or you would have thought would have been distracting to you, but has been like actually the perfect setting? I only say this because I do a lot of writing in a coffee shop, which to me is kind of a nightmare because it's loud, it's noisy, there's lots of stuff going on and other people. But it's weirdly like the most focusing thing for me. Have you had similar situations or?
I can't say I have, only because like I said, I had a traditional, you know, a traditional art background where I've been in a place where you have, you know, you share studio space. Mm-hmm. And I find that there's nothing more distracting than someone else like walking behind you trying to like look at what you're doing.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. We're done. Okay.
I'm out. I'm done.
Yeah. Any place where there's other people, I'm like, nope.
That makes sense. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah. So, but other than that, I mean, I love to, because this is all my imagination. I'm pretty sure even when I've done some streaming of creating my artwork is nowhere near what it's like when I first start. And I won't stream that because it's an entirely personal concept. I live in the maps that I create. I love to walk through them. I have a very vivid and very wild imagination. And I actually have an Indiana Jones hat that I wear.
Yes.
That is awesome.
Awesome, yeah.
I absolutely love that.
And I get into it. I like keep props around me. I have instruments that you would normally use for navigation, as well as doing cartography itself and surveying. I just keep things around me that keep me in that mood and that focus, and I play with them whenever I get distracted or need the distraction for that matter. So I like creating my own environments, and I think that if other people saw that, they would really lock me up.
I think that's perfect, though. I mean, again, how D&D is that? You know, it's exactly right. What we do, right? Like, The dream is to have the room that you go to play D&D in that's got like the faux stone brick walls and like the lanterns. Do you know, like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. When we get our house, we've already decided that my entire interior is going to look like this.
I Amazing.
Like, we're just going to make the whole house, like, really, really art conducive. So
that's awesome.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Because we can. Why not?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
As far as kind of my deal, like, kind of what led me to wanting to start this show and, like, kind of get into the Twitch streaming I dabbled with and, like, Twitch streaming D&D and voice acting and all that, you know, fun stuff. It's kind of funny. I absolutely hated the idea of any of this stuff. Back, I don't know, over 10 years ago or something, my mom, behind my back, enrolled me in an acting school that my sister went to. And she figured since I was driving my sister there anyway, I would love to get in on it and learn how to act. And at the time, that just was not for me. And I hated every moment of it except for improv class. Improv class I had a ton of fun in, and I was pretty good at. But I learned how to read monologues. I learned how, like, soap opera acting differs from acting in a, you know, different kind of TV show or a movie, and just things like that. And I never really thought I took too much from it. And many years again passed, and again, just was not feeling it, didn't want to do that. But about a couple years after that, I started listening to podcasts. And that's when I discovered the Podcast Beyond from IGN, which was a PlayStation podcast. And I realized that podcasts aren't boring radio shows where they don't have to be. It can just be people who are talking about a subject, in this case PlayStation, but, you know, joke around and have fun, and it can be very entertaining. And to me, it was all created via magic. I had no idea. I was like, how do these people do this? Like, you know, they must have this studio and this, that, and the other. And as the years progressed, I listened to more and more different kinds of shows. And I always had this thing in the back of my head that told me that I wanted to create something like this, which was a completely foreign idea to me at the time. And eventually technology increased. I learned how to use certain technologies doing other stuff. And I decided that I really want to do a podcast. And I want to do just a laid back, just conversational one where me and some friends that I gel really well with and that gel really well with me and each other can just sit and just talk. And will anybody find this entertaining? I don't know. This is a vanity project, as you'll notice is kind of a theme in my creating. but, you know, I just we did a couple episodes, test episodes that were not widely released, and it was so much fun. It was so much fun.
It really was.
And
well, you know, with the D&D community, so much of their projects are vanity based. I'm sure they can relate.
I mean, it's true. Like, really, when you think about it, especially like DMs who are creating and people who create their PCs and whatnot, there's a little vanity in all of it. So yeah. It's not necessarily a bad thing by any stretch. It's just kind of funny for me because that was never a word I would use to describe myself. And then all of a sudden I'm like, okay, I am a little bit when it comes to my creating. But we released a couple episodes, and at that point people were like, hey, you should try voice acting. And I said, that is not something I'm nearly skilled enough to try to do. But to humor...
Why not? You have a voice.
What's that?
You have a voice. That's all you need for voice acting.
That's true. That is very true, because there's all sorts of different voices needed. Yeah. But I was less concerned about that and more concerned with, like, actually being able to convey the actual acting in the voice, so that it doesn't sound like somebody's just reading from a script. It sounds like somebody who's living whatever experience that is.
Right.
And so I found a few monologues, and I decided to just for kicks, just try it out and see what people thought of it. And I forget what the first monologue I did was, but it was pretty intense, because in my personal style, I don't choose something easy when I'm first starting. I look at a bunch of monologues. I'm like, okay, what's the most difficult one to nail? What has the most ups and downs with emotion? Like, what is really going to be a challenge? And I'll do that one. So I did. And people really liked it. And I got a taste for this from recording this, that I was like, you know what? This is just a lot of fun. Even if I never get to do this, like, on a show or anything, Like, even if I just sit here and just record it for myself to listen to, it's pretty cool creating these scenes based off of just reading them from a piece of paper and really like conveying the emotion and everything that's going on in that. And, you know, from there, it just became kind of a thing where, from being a DM, really gave me the most of the like performing bug. So the next logical step was actually going on camera, which for me was terrifying. All of this was terrifying whenever I tried it. Anytime I released something that I recorded or that I tried, just sheer terror as to how badly I'll be ripped apart for whatever it is, you know, for however bad it is. And then streaming the Tal'Dorei game and DMing in front of people live on the internet was also terrifying. But a lot of it was I did it because I was terrified. I wasn't satisfied with being comfortable in the things that I do. I always want to push myself to try something new and try something I'm not comfortable with. And so I tried all these different things, and now I just have this need to do these things. It takes a lot of my free time, which I don't have a lot of due to work, you know, my day job, but I can't imagine living without it because it's just so much fun. And all because I just wanted to really test myself and try these new things that I wasn't sure if I would suck at or if I'd be great at and, you know, what have you.
And the cool thing is that when Martin finishes writing his stories or books, he automatically has someone who can do the audiobooks for him.
Oh, this is so true.
It is so funny you say that, because I have been told numerous times that I should do audiobooks.
There you go. See? Perfect. So. It's like it's meant to be.
Yes. Oh, and everything works out.
See, and they all live happily ever after.
Exactly. It's definitely a huge theme with this stuff, isn't it? I think that the whole act of doing something and being worried about putting it out there, I think that just shows you care. You've done something you care about, right? Like, and that feeds back into the vanity of it. I think anytime you do anything creatively, there's a bit of vanity involved, because...
Well, I think whenever you do anything and you present it to the world, there has to be a bit of vanity, simply because why on earth are you showing it other than to hopefully have someone like, yeah, that is awesome.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And to share and in your passion.
There's nothing bad about that either. Like, I think a lot of people are kind of a little bit like, oh, it just feels so, you know, like I shouldn't put it out there. Because it's like, no, if you do something and you're proud of it, like, put it out there. Like, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. Go for it. I think there's a lot of people that, like, well, I, you know, I'm one. I don't share my stuff because I'm worried, but...
Here's the weird thing. So, you know, because I get asked a lot about posting my stuff, whether or not I get like trolls, because, you know, I've live streamed while working. I've had my stuff shared on Reddit, which is terrifying.
Right.
But amazingly, well, one, especially in the D&D community, that happens so very little. And I have been in other communities, so I actually have like a really good understanding of like how often it happens.
Right.
And in D&D it happens a lot less. But the other thing is that when I get asked about it, do any of these people's opinion matter?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, if somebody is like, oh man, what you did absolutely sucked, it was horrible, blah, blah, blah. If you are going to stop whatever it is you're doing because of that person, then you were never really doing it for yourself to begin with. You were just doing something.
Exactly. This is actually a great segue to my topic, not to take B's role here.
Oh, sorry.
That's fine. Oh.
No.
Just roll right over me. What am I even doing here?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, for your voice, obviously. But no, what my topic was today is, have you ever been told that you were bad at something you loved doing? And if so, how did or do you deal with it today? So is this kind of funny, Devin, that you were just talking about that? Because I think that's a really kind of vital role in.
Right. Like, I think if you're going to be someone who's doing it for yourself and you don't share it, you know, which is great. There's actually quite a few people who do tons of stuff like that, and it's fabulous. But if you're terrified of putting it out there because someone's going to put it down, think of it this way. The most gorgeous person on this planet has people who think that they're ugly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The most talented person on this planet has people that think that they are just absolute rubbish. There is not a person. Think of your favorite DM. Think of your favorite show. Think of your favorite artist. All of them have people that constantly, oh man, I hate that show. I can't stand that artist. Oh, that's not real art. There's always going to be somebody out there who hates whatever it is you do, regardless of whatever it is you are doing, whether it's your voice, whether it's creating biography, map making, or stories. None of it's going to matter. There's just people who are just not going to like it.
Mm-hmm. And additionally, carry on.
The only thing I was going to add is the only people who, when they critique what you're doing, and genuine critique is not opinion, and there's a very big difference, take it from where the source comes from. As much as I love when other people want to critique my stuff, unless they are a cartographer or an artist or have an understanding of how things are created, I kind of can't really take their criticism as to heart.
That makes sense. And also, there's sometimes outside elements that are kind of affecting their opinion. It might not be that is their honest one at all. And they might actually, think that or see that it is good art or material or whatever it may be, but sometimes something else is going on with them, or they're already upset with you about something else, or they're jealousy can also play a role in it. There's a lot of other factors that can come into play.
Agreed.
And I think also with like a lot of content, like I think it's very hard to think of any type of content that you might enjoy that wouldn't have gone through some kind of critiquing process, some kind of music has producers, films, TV, books, all have editors, all have that kind of, it's part of the process as well. And I think a lot of the people that do that are actually quite unsung in a lot of senses. And I mean, a lot of our favorite books probably would not necessarily have been our favorite books if they had not gone through that kind of system. So it's an essential part of creating, I think. And like you say, it's up to you to take what you want to take. You don't have to listen to every single bit of criticism. This is kind of an interesting question for me because I don't think I've really put enough of myself out there at any point to have received this or to act on it, other than that I know it's actually a very important thing for me to start doing if I want to continue it.
I think if you want to produce anything, I think it's a lot easier to, I hate saying that someone ever has to pay their dues. Mm-hmm. But it's very true. I will never forget the first time that I had a gallery showing, and I had somebody just completely tear my work apart. And what's worse is, it published in a local newspaper, and all I could think of is everyone's reading this. Oh. Not a single soul I knew even read the article.
Oh, really?
I was like, really? Aren't you people paying attention? And then I realized, we think, oh God, everyone can see this. Everyone's reading this, or everyone's viewing this. And they're really not.
No.
Because
it's about you. So of course you're going to go and read it. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, a great example is how many times is someone like, oh, I hate that movie. You go watch it. You love it. Mm-hmm. So it's regardless of even what other people say, if they're going to like what you do, they're going to like what you do. It has nothing to do with someone else's opinion.
Well, that's the thing about art, too, is it's incredibly subjective. So, it's like you said, if someone's not giving their opinion from a position where this is something that they do as well and they have an eye for it and they know what to look for, that is factually good or bad, rather than this piece just doesn't speak to me. It's a completely different thing. And it can still be a great piece of work, whatever it is you're working on. But for whatever reason, somebody just doesn't like it. It just doesn't speak to them in the same way that it speaks to other people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's not even... Sorry, Devin, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just about to say, like, it doesn't even always like revolve around like something we produce, like content, like art or writing or anything like that. A friend who actually introduced me to tabletop role playing once told me out of anger that I sucked at playing rogues and I should stop doing it. And like, I was absolutely insulted that he had just come out and said that, and he didn't understand, you know, he pretty much said I was overreacting and that it was just, you know, him being honest and whatnot. And but like what I was talking about outside influences is that person at the time was upset with me for other reasons that I won't get into because it is personal and that's between us. But that was affecting how he was reacting to me. And even though he might have not said that ordinarily at the time, you know, that really hurt. And that absolutely kind of killed my confidence for the longest time. And then I kind of realized, well, like, I don't care. I enjoy playing rogues. I like doing it. So as a kind of like, excuse my language, but fuck you to him, I played one on live stream. And it still sometimes is mentally there for me. Like, I kind of have to stop overthinking things while I'm on the stream and not worry about it, because this is what it comes down to, is if you enjoy doing it and you're having fun, that's all that matters.
Exactly.
Yep.
Sorry, Devin.
No. Please go ahead. It's your guys' podcast. I'm just
No. After you, honestly. My Britishness will not stand for this.
Oh wait, I have family in the UK. I know to go first. Anyhow, I know to proceed. No, I think one, the only way to actually get better at anything is to keep going. So I think that even when there are people that are like, "Oh, you suck at this," don't let that stop you, because then you're just going to stay sucking at it if that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is, as my cat's knocking things over behind me, it's taking out the entire countertop. I think that a lot of people are, like, one of my favorite things is I have a friend of mine that, I'm not going to say what website that they're going to, but I'm pretty sure we all know the toxic community that's on it. And there's apparently a thread or two every once in a while that I will be notified of. And I love it because I actually have, she sends me clips of things, you know, like screenshots. And it says things like, "Oh God, Devin Rue is everywhere. I hate her name now."
Wow.
"You hate my name?"
Like, yeah, what?
What? Like, not even like they hate my artwork. They now don't, like, if they see my name, they're just going to instantly close the browser. Why? You know,
yeah.
But you realize a lot of it comes from people like I have gotten things like, "Oh, you know, I've argued over fantasy art being, if you're making cartography, we don't have any standpoint to understand how magic would affect the world." Right. So things can be different on a map than they would be in our reality. Mm-hmm. So I don't really go out of my way to critique anything that's specifically wrong with the, you know, features on maps and stuff, unless there's something like really painfully like, okay, how does this work?
Right. You know? Very quickly, so can I just say, because there's a big thing that people do wrong with real life maps, right, which is rivers. Am I right in thinking that? Because rivers are very, like, they don't just happen. In a magical world, well, I suppose they can just happen. I don't know, but in a magical world, you can have a river wherever you want, right? Like, there doesn't need to be a flow of water, because also there are
dragons. We do have real-world examples where it appears, especially from an overhead view, that rivers just start. So we have water sources. Yep. We have underground water sources. Now, rivers will always run from a higher elevation to a lower elevation. So that should always be the same no matter where you are, unless your world is gravity defying.
Right.
And that can happen. However, what makes a difference is you don't destroy the physics of your own world when you're creating it. So as long as if that can happen with water, then it has to be able to happen with other similar situations, whether it's just liquids or whatever, I don't know. But we do have underground water sources. We'll have a sudden sink in land that will just form a pond. that it will overflow. It starts a river. We have, I had somebody tell me that rivers don't run north to south.
Or, really?
Yeah. Or vice versa. I was like, no, it just, it's higher to lower. It really doesn't matter.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't use compasses.
Fine. Yeah. Totally. Oh, can't go that way. Yeah. But we do. We have some really neat. I love to use those whenever I get into an argument with somebody like, oh, that doesn't happen in our world. Oh, yeah.
Just have a handy document of like.
I do.
Yeah.
I have links and everything, so pictures. Good. Yep.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, as far as the topic goes, I've been trying to think of like any time I was told I was like bad at something. And the only time I can think is I remember when I was in journalism class. Funny thing about me is when I was in college, I was a journalism major because I thought that's what I wanted to do with my life. Clearly I've made mistakes. I'm not doing that. But I spent a lot of time in high school and college taking journalism courses, and I had a rival, and, I won't say his name because I'm not that kind of guy, but me and this guy did not like each other, and it didn't matter what I produced. It was bad. It was always bad. He was an editor at the time before I made editor, on the paper, and just everything was bad all the time. And now I guess I should give him some credit, because constantly being told I was bad at it just made me push harder and harder and harder to prove him wrong, mm-hmm. out of spite, because I can be a very spiteful person. And that was basically how I reacted to it. Did it make me a better writer? I think so. I really do. You know, it's something that I intensely focused on to get better. But after doing that, I didn't really do a whole lot where people would be like, you're really bad at that. And generally, if somebody told me that, I wouldn't take it to heart, because it was something I clearly didn't really care that much about. It's only ever been when I've actually cared about something that I'm doing that someone says, you're bad at that. Then I'm like, okay, well, I need to get better. I need to prove you wrong. I think probably my biggest critic is myself with whatever I'm doing. You know, I'm playing a video game. I'm pretty bad at this game. I know that. I'm not great at video games. Still love them. There's a lot of things that I'm bad at that I still love, and it just doesn't affect me.
I run around in circles in Halo. They nickname me Bait.
Funniest thing about Halo is I can't shoot anybody in that game to save my life. Nope. But I can drive a warthog really well. So when we would play Capture the Flag, I would be the designated driver and just transport people back and forth across the map, because everybody knew I couldn't hit any the broadside of a barn with a gun. So
it's good to find your niche, you know. You've got to own that. Yeah.
I make the joke all the time. I'm the least competitive person you'll ever meet, except with myself.
Yeah. No, I can totally appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the hard part is that, you know, especially depending on how you learn things, like so I'm visually impaired, and I got very frustrated as a child trying to figure out, like, I would get critiqued all the time. But critiques in the matter that nobody explained, like, oh, by the way, we see in three dimension, you don't. So this is why we're telling you what's wrong.
So I didn't know that. Correct in a way that you're not quite sure how to actually correct for.
Right. So there's a lot of people who are trying to be nice about it and just come off so abrasive, because mm-hmm. they just don't know how to phrase it. But I give them plenty of rope to hang themselves. I'm like, okay, so what exactly did you mean by that? Because I don't know if that's insulting or not, but go ahead.
Yeah, give me some context.
Yeah. I think those two topics tied really well together. Honestly, I can't think of a good segue for the third topic, and so I'm not even going to try. I am not even going to try.
So you could say that segues are a creature that you... really battle with, and so if we're talking about creatures that we battle with, what's one that you've yet to baffled. No, that doesn't work. I'm sorry.
You know what? It started off as like a real threat, kind of.
But then, like, I had the confidence. You know.
Yeah.
You know, you did.
And we could hear when you started, like, "Oh, I'm failing. I'm failing."
And
nobody
said anything, and I was like, "Oh, it's now I can feel it, and it's just too much."
Yeah.
But on that, I was having an interaction with someone on Twitter during the week about I think it was in that, like, what are your top five things? And someone asked me what my top five creatures were, and I ended up with a top creature that I've never used before, I've never encountered, but every time I flip past it in the Tome of Beasts, I'm just like, one day I need to use this. And so, to give you kind of an idea of what I'm looking for, so my favorite creature, one that I haven't used yet, is a creature called the Andron Jinyi, which is basically a gargantuan celestial snake. They're like 60 feet long, they're sheathed in brilliant rainbow-like scales and have patterns of every color around them. They have an air around them that, like, makes you think of a desert after a thunderstorm. Like, the way they're described is so kind of, like, evocative, and they have a really dual nature whereby they will live by tribes of sorts, and they'll protect that tribe, providing the tribe gives them the relevant tributes, and if they don't, then God knows this tribe is going to find out they haven't done right. And I think it's a really interesting thing. They're a celestial, but they're not necessarily good. They're quite a neutral creature. And I like them because if a party comes into contact with them and don't like what they're doing, they might doom a load of people, or maybe they go along with it, but people might be hurt because this creature is maybe mistreating them. And so I think they're just a really good moral creature. Do you guys have any, like, whether it's something that you would run? I don't know whether you will DM, but if you don't DM, is there a creature that you really want to come across and have a battle of wits with, or just literally fight?
Yeah, I've got one. it's one I've always wanted to use, and God willing, I will use it. And it's only because of the hype. I'm not gonna lie. I'm not normally a person that, like, gets wrapped into the hype of something, but you hear. You hear this monster whispered, and PCs run in terror. Just the mere mention of its name is enough to make any adventurer shake in their boots. And that, of course, is the Tarrasque.
Of course.
Yep, 100%.
I never quite got far enough into a campaign where I felt comfortable throwing one of those at my players. Mm-hmm. But I feel confident. I feel confident that this new group of adventurers that I'm DMing for will reach a high enough level that I don't feel completely and utterly guilty throwing a Tarrasque at them. It's just such an interesting beast, you know, like the amount of power and the amount of fear that it evokes. It's just, I don't know. There's something alluring about all that for me as a DM.
I'm now fearing for Sanguine's future.
I mean, all of your futures. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, heck, I'm not in the game and I'm worried about my future with one of those things running around. So.
Well, now I know what game not to get into.
Yeah, exactly.
I will not be guest starring in any game review.
Oh, that's hurtful.
You should have kept it a secret.
I always feel like they're one of those ones that you use to give, like, not even as a fight, but you're just like, by the way, you think you're strong? This exists. And it just goes off and it does its thing. But you never fight it. But the fact that you were like, you want to use it against them, it gives me chills.
Well, so. Like for me as a DM, like I love homebrewing my own like big monsters. You know, I'll use the books and whatnot for a lot of like the smaller encounters and things like that. But when it comes to something of that nature that's going to just spank the party, usually I've created it myself. And so that's why that's really the only thing I could think that's anything high level like that I really just be like, yeah, I just want to take it out for a drive, you know, just a little test run and see how it goes.
I mean, it's definitely a strong choice. Yeah, it's a very strong choice.
You know, nothing brings a party together like fighting something like that, though.
That's true.
Just being in the trenches, yeah. Figuring out a way to outsmart or to get out of this situation alive.
We're all buried right next to each other.
no one left alive to mourn.
Yeah.
It's a team building exercise.
That is real.
It is bonding.
I'm super boring, and so I used to have a DM that used to make fun of me for this, but anytime that we had a beholder Yeah. I was ridiculously giddy over this. Like, yeah. Oh, we're going to fight it. Like, this thing is totally going to kill me. I don't care. I love beholders. And I love to draw them. And I now have to make another one because we're talking about it. But
okay, that's amazing. Yeah. Is it the allure of you don't quite know which eye is going to kill you? Like, you don't quite know how you're going to go.
I love the chaos of it. There is nothing more chaotic than a beholder. And it's terrifying. And there's no way to prepare for all of it.
Right.
So no matter what, one of you is going to get hit so hard. And it's a crapshoot.
Yeah.
It's the Russian roulette of D&D monsters.
Yeah. It's one of my favorites.
I love that answer because it's actually one of my favorites as well. And I actually homebrewed a spectral beholder for this upside down tower for a group I used to DM for. And a regular beholder is mean. One that can possess you when you die is really mean.
My character might go for that, though.
And what ended up happening is one of the characters did die. The beholder possessed them. And I created this effect, essentially, where anytime this player would make an attack, they would have to roll against the beholder in their head to see if they can do the regular attack or if a random eye beam would shoot out of their forehead. And it ended up being just this, like, oh god, it created such chaos. It was so good.
I love that. I really do. That wild magic. Anything that just throws chaos into the mix.
The Wand of
I
Wonder.
I love. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh, man.
I'm so right there with you. Like I'm so right there with you on all that. I love, don't get me wrong, I love when a party like creates a great plan and everything goes according to plan and it's just like surgical precision. But I also love when you have that one character that's has a Wand of Wonder or something like that, and is like, I'm just gonna take a chance here, and then everything explodes and it's chaos and everyone's thinking on their feet.
Wild magic's great. I actually had a wild magic sorcerer who I didn't think was getting wild magic quite enough. So every time they successfully cast that spell, the bracket for wild magic would increase. So if it was a 1 for wild magic and they passed it, it would then be a 1 or a 2, and then it'd be a 1 or a 3, and it would get bigger and bigger until they had a surge, and then it would reset to 1 again. Because if you're picking wild magic, come on, you want wild magic, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You're hoping is not for enough.
Exactly.
Like, you're the only person at the table going, please don't get a 20. Please don't get a 20.
Yeah. It's like we're in a narrow corridor, but it's not going to be the fireball. It's going to be something interesting. I'm sure it is. So.
Yeah. Well, chain lightning.
For a short period of time, I did have a wild magic sorcerer half-orc. And it was... his name was Helga. And I rolled wild magic and it ended up that he was glowing was one of the effects, and essentially he ended up just convincing a bunch of townsfolk that he was a god of ale and that's why he was glowing, and he essentially started a church.
Oh my god.
And converted people to his cause and was just getting them to get other people to pay tithes. So he was just bringing in money from this church. And because he had a cup of ale that every time you emptied it, it filled up a little bit more and just never ran out. So he was using that to as proof of his ascension to godhood, and was just giving this cup of ale and letting it pass around amongst his followers. And that was the whole thing. So, yeah, wild magic can be amazing. You'll never know what you're going to get, and you never know what like fun story things are going to happen because of what you get.
That's why I love that Mel has the deck of many things right now. She has caused so many problems for the group because of those.
See, you know, I've never had a DM that was stupid enough to give my characters that.
Oh, trust me, Quinn definitely regrets it right now.
Yeah, I've convinced almost every DM that I've ever played with to let me play a chaotic character. Oof. Oh, yeah. And I play them, you know, because you can be a chaotic character and totally still go along with what the group needs. But I love it because then I get to make some of the most insane decisions and it fits my character. And my DM's just like, damn it, I let her do it. You know? And it's just chaos reigns. I love it.
I just imagine your DM, they're just like, poor life choices were made on my part.
Well, I had one DM where for almost 2 years, I was actually the villain of the campaign.
Oh, that's cool.
Nice. Oh, I like that.
Very cool.
Yeah, I was in the party. As far as they knew, I was on their side in the team. And the epic, they had to fight me at the end of the battle.
That's really cool.
Yeah, except for it wasn't supposed to go on for 2 years. We thought
really
we were having...
the part.
Oh, yeah. It was great because we thought we were only going to play, like, you know, a couple of weeks of it. And so many times they came so close to figuring out, like, finding out who it was. And meanwhile, I'm there. My character would, you know, have memory lapses, so they thought. And meanwhile, she's actually... Yeah, she's going back and fixing things and working with her henchmen and everything else. And then at the end, you know, we're all standing there. We're waiting to fight like the big baddie. And I shoot one of my party members in the back.
Oh, jeez.
Because I'm the big baddie. And that was it. And they were so mad. I had people wouldn't talk to me for like 2 weeks. And
oh, wow.
So angry with me. And they're like, 2 years. 2 years we thought you were on our side. I was like...
Oh, we knew you.
Yeah. I was like, it's D&D. They're like, that's just wrong. But it's great. You did it for 2 years. Like, it wasn't supposed to be.
Like, well done, but also, damn you. Like...
Yeah. I had so many people like, I will never trust you in another campaign again. I'm like,
God, that's real.
Probably shouldn't.
Yeah, the important thing is you can be honest about it. You know, that's what's important.
Well, now it's 2 years of lying to them that kind of made them upset.
Carrie, what's your monster?
I'm kind of torn on this a little bit, to be honest. Like, this isn't really something I haven't encountered because, well, I wanted to say mimics, but we've all encountered them. But I freaking love them, and I'm always excited when we get to them. But one thing that hasn't been added as a creature to my knowledge yet, I kind of have two here, but has anyone seen the movie Ghost Shark?
Yes.
No.
I have not, no.
It's so bad.
It is horribly awesome, but essentially, oh God, how to describe this? It's the ghost. Was it ghost of one shark or many?
Well, there's multiple ghost sharks.
Yes, that's right. Different kinds, we find out. But they can get you anywhere. Like, it can be the ice box. It can be a toilet. It can, anywhere where there's essentially water. It can be steam. This thing can get you. And, like, if you ingest it, it can just pretty much, like, rip you apart from the insides. And it would just be amazing to encounter something like that. Because how the hell do you fight that?
Suddenly
the desert.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, they tried with a nuclear weapon and it didn't work, so
no.
I'm totally surprised to see this only has a 3.3 on IMDb and a 29% on Rotten Tomatoes. That shocks me to my core.
I mean
I'm kind of with you on that, like, just for the surprise of just like I would like to I just take a swig of my water. Roll initiative. Wait, what?
You what?
Go shark.
All right, what's your guys's favorite improvised or wackiest improvised weapon?
Oh god, that is a good one.
I don't know what counts. I think I can't remember if I've said this story before, and again, I'm not sure if this really counts, but we DM was planning this huge battle against some big bad, I think he was a dread pirate, and he was like levels and levels above us, and he thought this was going to be a huge battle that was going to stretch like most of the campaign. He really didn't have much planned afterwards, and I used what was the spell?
Was this the true polymorph one?
Yes.
And
transformed this big dread pirate into my bunny familiar. And technically, this bunny familiar was like 10 levels above me. And it was just, I just literally pictured it as the bunny from Monty Python's Holy Grail.
Yeah. Very good.
Of course.
Yep. So I don't know if that counts, but honestly, the DM was so pissed, but actually like was kind of proud at the same time. He's like, "You bitch, I don't know what to do now."
You ruined everything.
Right? I had nothing planned after that. Absolutely nothing.
Nothing. Well, yeah.
Here's how you work on your improvised skills.
It's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it was like, okay, guys, order a pizza and I'll be back in five.
Just give me
right?
Yeah.
Give me a moment.
Go and film this quickly. I'm trying to think because I've only mostly DM'd. Sorry, Brian, you're going to say?
Well, I think, yeah, because the only thing I can think that I ever used as an improvised weapon was an airship.
Oh my God.
Very subtle. I like
party
that.
Killer.
Well, we were facing off with just. Probably was it like 30 pirates on an airship that was docked, and I was like, I counted the amount of us, there was like four of us. I was like, yeah, there's no way. So I climbed to the bottom of an airship, I splashed oil on it, and I lit it on fire.
Nice.
And I died in the process because I had no athletics whatsoever. But I managed to roll a couple of nat 20s in trying to light this thing on fire, so it worked. It ended up working. And after a few rounds,
going out with a blaze of glory.
Oh, it was. It ended up killing the whole party too. But that was not on the airship. They got off. That was a whole different deal. But everybody on the airship died. So technically, I used the airship as an improvised weapon by destroying it and dropping them about 1,000 feet down to the ground.
That works.
I think my one just comes from I had a player of mine that. They didn't really, it's not improvised as such, but if there was something in the room that they could try and do some kind of backflip, front flip, leap off of before their attack, they would do that. So they were constantly just making athletics and acrobatics rolls. Sometimes it worked. Sometimes.
Not too much.
It'd be like, they'd be walking through a field and there'd be a stone wall and the party would move around it and he'd be like, yeah, I want to try and leap over it. And I'm like, yeah, of course you do. Yeah, I'm already ready for your roll. I that's probably the closest. I've not really played enough to have that myself. But
this wasn't me myself, but I did have another party member use the corpse of another party member.
Oh, see, that's kind of close to my favorite, which my favorite improvised weapon was a gnome in a haversack.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Yes. We had one of those, like, we're pulling off, like, a really... We were supposed to be the good guys. We were kind of pulling off a heist. And we had to get more people in to the building than we were allowed. So we jokingly were like, yeah, maybe we're going to go out and we're going to get like these huge duffel bags, everything else. Our gnome fit in it. So I was like, oh, this is perfect. We'll just like put clothes over you. We rolled. We got a really nice high roll. So gnome fit in there. I'm carrying it in when our wizard is so paranoid, thinks that they got spotted, and starts just freaking out and attacking people.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
And I am right next to a guard, and I was like, we don't have any weapons on us because we were supposed to go in without it. And so I'm like holding the haversack. I was like, I swing at the guard with the haversack.
That is amazing.
Our gnome is like, you do what? I don't know what else to do. It's the only thing I've got in my hand. Because my DM's like, you could put it down, but that's your action. I was like, nope, I'm going to swing with it.
Yeah.
I took the guard out. Our gnome lived, and I slid the haversack over to our cleric. But yeah.
Now here's the question everybody wants to know. What damage die is a gnome in haversack?
Yeah, very true.
Oh, I think we just did bludgeoning, there we go, damage, and I think it was, oh god, I want to say it was like 2d6.
I mean, that's an upgrade. That is definitely an upgrade.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure it was like a 2d6, and he took the guard out. Guard was gone, so that was good. Oh, I still could have been worse. Could have been the dwarf.
That'd be 2d8 at least,
right?
Yeah.
Totally killed him. We just like knocked him out. Gnome not happy with me.
No.
I'm noticing a trend in your games, Devin.
I know. No one wants to play the game. I'm so sorry.
All right. Well, with that, Devin, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. Oh, it was really great having you on.
This was awesome. Thank you very much for having me.
No, it was definitely a pleasure. Yeah. It was great getting to talk about this stuff with you, learn a little bit about each other's processes, and then hear about the gnome in a haversack, which is now my favorite new improvised weapon.
It really is.
It's also the name of my punk rock band. It's really weird that came up. So.
Right? It's strange. I knew that sounded familiar.
Also, thank you so much to everybody who listened today and hung out with us at the Nerdy Point of View podcast. As always, we appreciate you taking the time to listen to us. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Captain Sugarbear. That's at CPT Sugarbear. You can also find me DMing Tal'Dorei, A New Dawn, at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Soulbear RPG on Twitch. That's twitch.tv Soulbear RPG. You can also find me on Lost in Time on Saturdays. That's at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And soon, I will be DMing a new bi-weekly game. It is basically if Mel Brooks did Curse of Strahd. So if you've seen Dracula Dead and loving it, you're probably going to love it. So I'm going to try my hand at some comedy indie and see how that goes.
Beautiful.
That is all I have. Carrie, where are you on the internet and what are you working on?
You can find me on Twitter at Shrieke, S-H-R-I-E-K-E-E, and Instagram under my new name, Carelessly, which is K-E-R-L-E-S-S-L-E-E. I am working on actually a new Malkacha piece, just kind of an update with everything she's been going on. She's definitely got some changes to her, as well as working on my wooden elven clock that I'm currently burning.
Right on. Martin, where are you on the internet? What are you working on?
I am, as always, on Twitter, at Gryfolion, at GryfolioN, talking nonsense, jumping on bandwagons, and just generally wasting my time. It would be worth, if you have any interest in catching one of my Once the Blue Moon streams, checking out twitch.tv/Gryfolion. And there'll probably be something spooky coming up on there soon. I need to start playing something, so that'll be a thing. I'm really nailing the details right now. I've really got this thing whole really settled down. But yeah, mainly just come over, chat to me on Twitter. Always enjoy talking with you.
Right on. And Devin, where are you on the internet and what are you working on?
I am all over the internet as Devin Rue. Kind of made it really simple for everyone to find me. everything's under my name, so it's, you know, and I'm constantly posting about RPGs and, of course, doing my map making. I can't talk about the current project that I'm working on, but hopefully Ooh. You all will be seeing it very soon. Hopefully. Excited. Yeah. And that's all I can say about that, unfortunately. Damn NDAs. But mostly I'm just working, making lots of wonderful maps for the D&D community. So getting through that huge map commission to you that I've got going on.
Right on. All right. Well, don't forget, you can also find the show on Twitter at NerdyPOV and check out all of our new episodes and our legacy episodes at NerdyPointOfView.com. Make sure to also check out our Facebook page and join our Facebook community as well. We even have a Discord channel if you're into that sort of thing. Just reach out to the podcast on Twitter and we'll make sure you get that link. Of course, if you liked what you heard today, it helps us out immensely if you could leave us 5 stars and a review on iTunes. It doesn't take a whole lot of time, doesn't take too much of your time, but it means the world to us. For small shows like ours, it definitely helps us grow. And with that, we have our community shout out. And today's community shout out goes to Murder Dice Podcast, a longtime friend of the show, a longtime personal friend. And you can find them at murderdice.com. And check them out on iTunes as well. It's just a really cool group of people playing some D&D. I don't want to say too much about it. Just trust me, give it a listen. You're going to enjoy it. I don't like giving away other people's stories. Otherwise, what's the point of listening? So definitely give them a check out. Give them a listen. Give them a 5 stars and a review on iTunes as well. And looks like soon they're going to be having some apparel working up too. So that'll be cool to check out. You can find them on Twitter as well, at Murder Dice. Just how it sounds. And with that, does anybody have anything else before we call it a day?
I'm just ready for my dues.
Yeah, all ready for those dues. I will just say, if you at home were thinking of your own, like, kind of obscure D&D creature or whatever, definitely let me know, because I'm all about finding about those weird and wonderful creatures that I've never
or improvised before. Weapons.
Yes. Please.
Just tell us about your gnome in a haversack. All right.
The world needs to know.
The world does. But for now, we are out.
Do 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 do. Do, 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 do. Hey.
Great, now we're getting copyright strike for the Andy Griffith theme.
Was that what that was?
Yep.
Oh. I was being sarcastic.
I have not had enough coffee for sarcasm.